Welcome to Ever Beyond.
Broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network.
Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond.
Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Wolf Spirit Radio, you are indeed listening to. Let me turn the speakers down so you don't forget that boomy noise. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Ever Beyond. It is July the 2nd, 2017. Seem to be starting a little tardy. But perhaps, you know, everything starts at the right time. Everything's been a bit kind of delayed today. Then the server crashed at the beginning of Simon's show, but here we go. Here we are. Excellent. Well, presumably everybody's back on wolfspiritradio.com and all of that. But if you're not, you can go to Wolf Spirit Radio. You can go to wolfspiritmedia.com. We're kind of building a site, but there's a page there you can use. And then there's, everbeyondradio.com, of course, because this is where it all started. So, and you know, it's kind of, that's the source of it all. We run a kind of distributed network. There's no one server. So if one goes down, another one can be picked up. You just need to know where to go. I've got, servers at different parts of the world. And of course I'm not going to say where they are, but you know, it's probably easy enough to find, but, I've got different servers with different companies, and I have my own independent servers to keep the station running. As that is, I'd love to hear from more producers, people who want to start their own radio stations, people who've got some ideas, people who have maybe started recording conversations with people. I know a lot of people maybe go to YouTube first, but the spoken word, I believe, has a lot more power than visuals. You get a better idea of what's going on inside somebody's head with the space that you don't have to take up doing the video part. You know, you can really feel for it. Anyhow. So there I was. There I was somewhere. There I was gone, as they say in Canada. So yeah, we were wondering about, you know, I was wondering about what to do today on the show, since I had no guest. And we were talking about the Lyran trauma. Now that was about a year ago. What is also going on. Okay, so about a year ago, using the Wayback Machine, we're going back a year. 2016 the heyday of July 2016. A gentleman named Max Spears was doing some talks and being radio interviews and things like that. And about the beginning of July, he said something of the order of, they're going to try and break our hearts. And I pretty much imagined that they had a damn good try, because the first thing that they did was to murder him. And whether it was supposed to be at that a particular thing. But there was a rendition, and that rendition was a tear that goes back into the human psyche. And so one of the things that we were talking about tonight was the idea of, I've talked about the Lyran trauma, but we're not just Lyran. We have other races in our physical body in terms of the DNA structure and little bits from here and little bits from there. It's actually going to be the subject of Alex Collier's webinar as well at the end of the week, but maybe I could preface a bit of that. If I can find it. Now, where? How did I find it the other day? Oh, God. Yes. I think it's race. Oh, dear. Anyway, I'm going to dig it out. I'm just going to do that. Well, that's not going to find it either. I wonder if it's in my history. That might be. Oh, yes, it might be in the history. There's a good idea. No, not that. Oh, yes, it is. There we are. This is from Andromeda. Oh, thank God for that. Thank God. Anyway, so I have the list in front of me of the ET races, the 22 ET races. And so, you know, I've been thinking about this, for quite a long time, and this is like, you know, I can't just do this. Can't just be me. There's the, well, basically what I was saying is that there's the Lyran trauma, which is what I picked up and kind of pulled out of my DNA. And that trauma is being, shocked, out of one reality into another. And ever since then, the human has not been able to, rapidly go from one frequency to another. It's shocking, you know, when somebody, for instance, somebody who's a like generally focused person, let's say like a cameraman or a pilot or something like that, is focused on their job. Now, obviously, you know, if you were the wife of that pilot and they were doing their job, you could not have your normal conversation with them because, you know. You know, they're all about altitude and yaw and pitch and stuff like that. You know, they're in the cockpit. They're in their zone. But when they come home, they're in the home zone and they can behave normally. If, for instance, somebody suddenly switched, to being like a pilot all the time, that would be shocking to somebody. You know, if you're just having a conversation, this is the normal thing, you know, what would you like for dinner, dear? And then suddenly they turn into a pilot and they're talking to the conning tower and all this rubbish. You get the idea that transition would be a very shocking thing. People turn. People are always shocked when somebody, moves from one mode to another. And, you know, usually because they've been triggered, into an emotional reaction, and you know, people often they go hard when they hit an emotional reaction. Hard expansion is anger. So I'm just looking at the camera. So basically, what I was picking up this last year is the Lyran experience of the shock of being invaded. And the complete inability to defend oneself. You know, they weren't warriors or anything. They just weren't expecting it. You know, obviously from this perspective, you'd think, oh, well, more for them. You know, they should have looked out for themselves, but you know, they didn't know that they didn't know what they didn't know. And in a way that's kind of been what the experiences are. You know, you keep forgetting. Oh yeah, then we had this terrible thing happen to us once. Oh, what's that? Oh, that's quite interesting. Oh, these are quite interesting flowers. Look at these. And you know, easily distracted from essentially an extremely painful thing. And as I said, I've been calling that the Lyran trauma. And looking at this list of, there's, you know, it starts off with the reptilian Seekars. I don't know how to, Seekars? I think it says Seekars. It's C-I-A-K-A-R. You know, let's just say that once again. C-I-A-K-A-R. How very interesting. Seekar. And then there's the Vegans, the Lyrans, and then the three Orion, and Cygnus Alpha, Arcturians, Pleiadians, Reticulans, Sirians, Aldebarans, Andromeda, Mizrines, Myrtacans, Cassiopeians, Canis Venatici, Pictorians. Oh wow, they're the animal human Yeti, Sasquatch type. Antarians, Sagittaria. He was a human feline. Nibiruan, Anunnaki, who originally are from Bootes constellation. That's up by, the Great Bear. Is something burning? Oh, sorry. Tau Ceteans, the Capellians, Capella. Procyons from the star system Procyon, binary star, and the Hyades, which is the Aldebaranian little cluster near Aldebaran. So all of those people have had their DNA jagged into us, or molded, or you know, raped, or plundered, or maybe sometimes with love. You know, maybe there's some very loving cross breeds here. But generally, we are a bit of all of those. And everybody, I believe, carries a little trauma that makes up what we call the human condition, that makes it very difficult for us to live with ourselves. And of course, having a part of us that is reptilian and a part of us that is vegan, or Lyran, who are and have been at war for a billion years, that's going to be difficult, isn't it? It's going to be quite a thing to do, to have. And depending on the balance you have between you, you know, between those two, the reptilian and Lyran, you're going to have some kind of, level of conflict. Let's put it that way, between one, inner part and another. And you may find, okay, so, let's go in. Let's talk a little bit about the reptilian trauma. Yeah, the reptilian trauma. Now, cause, you know, not my most favorite race. But, you know, we have to move on and we have to heal and we have to get, you know, and we also have to realize that, they're a part of us. You can't rip out something, but you can't fight it forever. So somehow we need to make peace inside ourselves. Now, here's the thing. We need to be able to heal the reptilian trauma. Yeah, you heard me right. We need to heal the reptilian trauma. So what is the reptilian trauma? So, by the way, if somebody's got relevant intel on this, please join me. I'm more than open to, cause we all need to know about this. This is something that is underlying the PTSD that, humans suffer from, that causes them to move into being susceptible to war. So if we could learn how to heal these things, and perhaps even heal them on an archetypal level, that people can just be released from it without even having to know about it. But maybe it helps. Feel a soft spot for the Reppy trauma. The tennis spliced with love. That's lovely. So, here we are. We have, to a lesser degree or more, an amount of reptilian within us. And if you're aware of it, you'll see that it's essentially the reptilian part of us is that drive, you know, the things that use desire and set up the main, so there's a lot of stuff, right? Let's look at the satanic structure. Let's not, the reptilian, sorry, I read this word. Let's look at the reptilian structure, but it is what we call satanic because to us, it's the most evil thing. Oh, they eat people. Well, you know, we still have to have a heart for them, even though they eat people. It's difficult. It's difficult. So, part of their, well, look, I've been looking at my chickens, right? I see my chickens as a micro reflection of a reptilian society. And, so I've got these two super soldiers that are growing up now. They refuse to even live in the coop. You know, they sit on the top of the coop all night. They don't nest like the rest of them. We'll see what happens when the next fox comes along. We'll see how tough they are, and if they survive that. But anyway, that's their choice, right? That's the reptilian little thing. Meanwhile, but yes, the pecking order society, incredible hierarchical society. When the queen dies, the rest of them squabble and fight and kill each other and, you know, until the next one, comes up on top. So, things that reptilians value, are things like honor and loyalty, or at least that's their desire. They value it and they desire it. But the trouble is they have trouble keeping that kind of loyalty. So there's always this element of what you call treachery that is such an old fashioned word, treachery, but, the idea that, you're paying homage and you're being all nice and sweet, but in the meantime, you're plotting against someone else. Or you're plotting, you know, you're plotting against, this person that you're being sweet to and, planning their downfall. And, you know, our history books are full of all this stuff, but who's really like that? It's a different thing, isn't it? All right. Hang on a second. All right. Yeah. Patrick. You're sweet. Yeah, so you're talking there about mammals bonding differently. Lyra, do you want to call in? Do you want to, talk about this? Reptiles like respect. There's a thing. Okay, so, all right, yes, exactly. Okay, yeah. Cheers, that's a great little thing. All right, there's Pat. Okay. Hey, Pat.
Hello.
Hello, you can turn off your vid.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
And you can turn off your audio.
A great little. Thank you.
Who framed Roger Rooster? Hey there, how are you?
Fantastic. I'm trying to get my video off here. Yeah. There we go.
Are you on some sort of pad thing?
I see a camera. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, click that. Bottom left.
Got it.
That's the one. There you go.
How's the sound quality?
Perfect.
Thank you.
Good, good. So yeah, I'm talking about what seems to be the thing of the moment, which is the reptilian trauma.
Yeah.
So have you had any, do you have any insights into that? Have you spoken to your reptilian inner self, your past reptilian being incarnations and stuff?
I'd say maybe my workiness is, I remember you said like, we all have the reptilian in us, our spine. It's the spine. And, you know, the reptilian brain. So it's in us. And I definitely know about PTSD. When I just think about the reptilian brain is like, it's like learning how to work them all together so that something's not more dominant than something else. But it's almost like when, there's imbalance, that you could say reptilian aspect just takes over, and understandably so when it's under such threat. But, Anywhere else you'd like to go with that, I'd love to talk more, but,
Well, yeah. So, the spine, the snake that is inside our body.
Yeah.
And yeah. So here's the thing, and Chez, would you like to call in and talk about that? Maybe I'd like you to talk about that, Chez, because that was a very interesting little vignette that you posted there in the chat, and I'd like everybody else to hear that later. Yes.
And all the shows today have been so nice, so wonderful.
Trying to keep it. You know, there's a lot of crap going on in the world, isn't there? And, you know, there's so much. It's okay, so. And I was talking about this before. There's a book called Worlds in Collision by Emmanuel Velikovsky, and he studied history as well as astronomical history and astronomical readings from all over the world. And he discovered various, he discovered like 300 years missing out of the Bible account and things like that. And when you put that back, it makes everything sink back in. But aside from that, one of the things he said was when, okay, so our solar system has recent history of disruption. 3,500 years ago, there was a flyby by this comet, which is now what we call Venus, according to this. And that is the moment of what we call the Exodus. You know, the 10 plagues and all that, and the rising of the sea, and the killing of the pharaohs and all this stuff. Well, imagine if that was like, well, you could say that could be the effect of Nibiru coming past as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Or it could be the result of Venus coming past. Because one of the things that happened a few years ago is that we had a Venus transit, which puts Venus directly between the sun and us. And what that means is, well, I don't know if you're aware, but at beyond, you know, like you get a comet, and as the comet swings around the sun, you see this, you know, this tail that is spreading away from the sun. It's what is caught up in the solar wind that is blowing away from the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, every planet has that as well. It's a long, thin stream. It's like, you know, you put a rock in a river and you see this wake after it, and there's a long, thin stream. So we come into the wake of Venus. And a few years ago, this happened, and you could look at the news, and they were reporting biblical-like phenomena happening during that time. You can check it out. You know, insects and larvae and all that stuff coming from the sky. Yeah. So it's like detritus and debris that comes off every planet.
Oh.
So when a planet passes us, we get, you know, we get caught in the exhaust pipe, as it were. All right. So that's number one. And what happens when there is conflict in the solar system is that there's conflict, you know, the disturbance goes all the way down to our level.
Yes.
So, there is electrical things and electrical balances that are changing. And when electricity balances and magnetic fields change, magnetic field changes are these changes in moods that we're all experiencing now. And this is partly why everybody's in trauma. And this comes back to what I was talking about right at the beginning of the program about how humans are not able to change frequency easily. Yeah, we're resistant to frequencies changing because at certain times they've changed and they haven't changed well. So you tense yourself up against it.
Mm.
See what I mean?
Oh, fair. You just see, yeah, I do.
Yeah. Okay, so, so as, you know, we're talking about, like, if, what is the trauma that is driving everything? You know, what, because, so you can see, for instance, that a certain trauma at a certain phase would turn a person into a certain thing. Yeah? And the other, rubric with this is that, people share their feelings. Everybody shares their feelings. This is what I say, because when you I could say, well, I'm feeling terrible, or I'm feeling great, whatever. That's one way. Otherwise, you might not want to, or you might not be able to access that. So essentially you traumatize other people into feeling the feeling that you are trying to get them to feel. So then they feel it. So it works, but it kind of all works out backwards, because nobody wants to be traumatized either. So yeah, people share their feelings.
Yes.
And when you've been heavily traumatized, you heavily traumatize others. And that's how these energies are passed on. It's like a huge shuddering feeling that you can't express to others, but shudder them as well.
Mm. Yes.
So, yes, we need to develop. This is like, Lyra, please come and join us. Come and join us. Cheers. Come and join us. Oh, my husband's on the phone with, it's going to be, all right. Well, you can call, you can use Skype. Oh, maybe you're on your iPad or something. Anyway, call him. Come on, come on. Cause it's a relevant thing, you know, and I remember it. So, and also Lyra, you know, you're saying here, we need to develop flexible thinking. Shudder like butter. It's, we kind of absorb energies. We're really good at processing energies. People are stunned that, you know, what you can feed to people and they still stay alive, you know? Yeah. Sounds like described punishment. Yes. Well, so we're talking about the trauma. So, one of the things that I've felt were relevant to the reptilian issues. All right. So I'm going to read it out, Chez, because she put it in the chat room, and I kind of agree. I kind of felt myself into that, if you like. All right, where's it gone? You can never find anything in the chat room, because it doesn't do that thing properly. All right. Oh no. Oh no, I'm completely lost in it now. Okay, well, look, I'll say it in my own way. Is that it now? Yeah, no. I'll say it in my own way. So here's the thing. I do say that, don't I? Chez has made a meme, so I say it. So here's the thing. So the idea was that the reptilians were an experimental, organism that was made in some alien laboratory on some distant remote planet. In some distant remote galaxy, it wasn't kind of what they wanted. And so they poured it down the toilet, you know, they didn't kill it. They just poured it down the toilet, much as what happened to Black Goo, interestingly. So they poured it down the toilet and, like Ninja Turtles, developed into a highly survivable race. And somehow have a bit of what they call a chip on the shoulder about being just a kind of mistake, and, as being abandoned. And so, you know, if you put yourself in the place of an organism at that point, if you put yourself in the place of an organism at that point, the first thing you'd say is not good enough, you know, it's not good enough, so they're pouring us away. So then they're abandoned and then they're exposed. And then they make up a mythology, a history of themselves that is eternally mysterious and great. So they don't have to face the shame, the deep, deep shame of having been rejected in the first place. The first thing that ever happened to them at birth, they were rejected and not good enough. That must really give someone a bad attitude. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. She's posted it. I heard somewhere that the reptilians were genetically messed with by another race. Dragons mixed with something else, but it didn't work well and they were disregarded or outcasts. And I can understand that they are pissed somewhat. Yeah. So, sounds like the Gnostics' version of the origin of Jehovah. Well, there you go. That figures, you know, all fits together, doesn't it? Really. That they have a kind of conflated, you know, imaginary version of what their true history is. And will therefore lie about anybody else's. You know, it's like just exactly what they all do in you know, in the propaganda press.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and I think it was something, I don't know where you heard that. It sounds like something Jessica spoke about once. She may be, is she around? Yeah. Yeah, I've certainly heard it somewhere. But it fits the picture. Do you know what I mean? It fits the picture of the, of being rejected. And if you look at the way society is structured, all of the traumas that are aforementioned are built into society. Do you see what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
So, are you all right? Have I traumatized you?
Not at all. It's fun. It's fun for me to hear how clearly you state things. Like, yeah, it's delightful.
All right.
I can add more.
Please do. Less. I mean, you know, here you go. Have some floor. Yeah, there you are. You're on the call.
It's so fun right now. I have, I don't know what to say I have a cat, but I've got someone who it was their cat. Now I have a cat that just came down. It's just so fun how, again, this connection with animals, the sun, the light, connecting with Mother Earth and how this really connects for me with like reptilian is, is this trauma that you talk about. It's like, yes. And one second here is the cat wants outdoors. This is literally just 2 seconds. With reptilians, you know, it's like the trauma to really understand the trauma that we've all been through, the trauma that, that would create the toughest warrior to be spit out like that. So it makes sense. But in a way too, it's like, it doesn't make any sense because it's a really bad excuse. It's like, cause this race or other races clearly to some degree see what they're doing. And at some point then, you know, you have to use your own awareness. Like, my gosh, here it is. I'm using these technologies or this information about, you know, this, that, the other, because I have a chip on my shoulder and I'm going to demonstrate it through this, you know, force of power. And like you said, it's in everything. Everything we do, it's there. And that's what's so amazing is as we're waking up, we're all seeing in every place where there's force, where there's like you said, that draconian rule, everywhere where that's at, that's really being seen through, I think, so clearly now. And it's everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere. But yet it's, you know, people are seeing it. So it seems like, yeah, we'll see where that goes.
But, See, Lyra, you know so much. Why can't you call in? Please call in, Lyra. Lyra, it's 3:30. I'm calling out here. I might even call you. And yeah, if you want to call in, Liz, that's fine. You got something to add to this, because this is what's going on right now. There's so much betrayal. There's so much infighting. There's so much. Everybody's ripping everybody else's face off. You know, oh, look, you've got a mask on. No, I haven't. I really look like that. You know,
I think part of this is, you know, part of this. I love how you introduced today's show, the Lyra and Trauma, because again, when so many people, I've heard this again and again, it's like when they first come in contact with this information, you know, and whether it be the information about what really happened at 9/11, what's really happening in England right now with the tower. I mean, what's really happening? And, you know, as that mask comes off, it's so painful because, you know, for all of us, when I first got introduced to it, even a little bit, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat because it was just, it rips your guts out. You're like, whoa. And it's so hard to process the information. And I didn't even think about it, but it is. It's a year later. And it's almost like, you know, we've kind of known this and had time to kind of feel into it. But a lot of people, you know, this is brand new for them, or at least it consciously it's new for them. And that can be very challenging.
Indeed it is.
Indeed it is.
And can you turn off your speakers, Liz? Or turn them right down. Thank you. There we go. we're joined by Elizabeth. And hello, are you there?
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. So, the reptilian trauma.
Hello. Well, reptilian trauma. What can I say? I think there are good and bad of them as well, isn't it? For me, what I can recall is mostly dream-like states sort of thing. But I recall sort of in dreams, sort of, worlds different to here, planets with, floating islands where people lived, where there were snake-like people as well. And they were not antagonistic towards us. And this people that lived there, I think, may be ancestors of us. 'Cause they looked very human-like to me. And they had everything needed. The planet itself was lush. Was beautiful, but people were not living in the planet itself. To do with that, there was other beings as well, and there was other reptilian creatures. But, you know, I think to a point, if we're all to move forward, we also have to be able to learn compassion, learn sort of love. And I know that it's difficult to have compassion towards someone who's still continuously trying to submit us and to control.
I think we lost Elizabeth there.
Hey, I'm here. Hello?
You're still there. But
okay.
So good, we're still on the air and everything's fine, except Elizabeth's gone. Damn it, where's she gone? Let's try that again. Maybe she went out of zone. So yes, beings that Yeah, and I immediately think of Sleetaren, the snake-like beings, from the Andronicus, Chronicles. Interesting. So yes, Lyra, while you're there, now I need to, get some music going in a minute. Find some nice tunes. Oh, that'll make everybody cry.
Yeah.
Oh, that one. That'll do. So let's put that on and, we'll join you in a few minutes. Epic.
Yes.
Epic. John Miles music. Ah, yes. Thank you very much. Yes. Now, was that the one that's based on Rachmaninoff? I think it's the other one. It's, All By Myself. Eric Carmen's All By Myself is based on a Rachmaninoff tune. Not that one. Anyway, meanwhile, welcome back to Ever Beyond at exactly midnight UK time. Just right around the clock. So, I'm here with Patrick Anderson and Patrick Anderson.
Yes.
That's, I thought there were more of you, but now there's just two of you. hang on, I'll put both of my eyes off. So it's all about reptilians and, bringing that part of us back into ourselves in a harmonious way. I mean, it's like, how can we do this? How can we live together? Everybody wants to live together. Why can't we live together? It's about knowing what the order of things is, isn't it? And knowing the truth.
Yes. Yes. It's so fun. Elizabeth, she's so wonderful. And yeah, she shares so many great things. And yes, like finding these balances and, first finding them within ourselves. I love what you shared about with sugar and how we disguise loneliness or all the different feelings. And again, whenever we cover something that we don't even know we're covering, it always comes out a different way at some point. And as we keep tracing that back and healing it at its root, it's amazing what can happen or the changes that can happen both in our body and in the people around us and in the way that we interact.
Yeah, well, sugar. Anyway, I don't know what happened to Lizzie. She disappeared. Anyway. But we were talking about this whole, well, we're trying to integrate ourselves and we can't integrate ourselves until we know ourselves, know thyself. And to know thyself means knowing what you're made of. And if we're made of all these different races, we need to know the true history of them. We need to know the true history of us, so that we can make sense of ourselves, of why we have this and why we have that and why we do this and why do we do that. You know, like I was saying before, you know, why do we crave sugar when we're infested with mold? It's because that's its consciousness, hijacking our consciousness, hijacking our cravings, you know?
Yes.
So, yeah, and heavy metals do that as well, you know, mercury, aluminium. They all make the brain cells recede away from it.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So betrayal is one of the orders of the day in terms of the reptilian trauma. And, you know, like we were saying, you know, there's the story that they were, you know, an accident and that they were not good enough and thrown away. Perhaps there was an idea that they were promissory, they were promising and that they'd been just rejected. Because there does seem to be a lot of that. You know, it does seem to work out into the hierarchical society, all these little micro traumas that make up the fractured picture. You see what I'm saying?
I do, yes.
Oh, there's Lizzie. You're back.
Hello.
Did you
Hello.
You teleported out.
Yes. I don't know, it's just technical stuff, you know. I don't know what happened.
Oh, right.
I've been trying pushing buttons.
So, you were halfway through a story.
Yes, now I've been thrown off. I don't know where I was. But yes, I was talking. I don't want to say, Patrick was talking. I don't want to sort of, butt in. So let him finish and, you know, I'll try and pick up where I was.
Okay. But, yeah, I think you were talking about, your dream experiences. So,
I would love to hear you continue, Elizabeth, on that, if that works.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Very well.
Yeah, perfectly, wall to wall.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very fragmented, you know, and it's sort of a dream state, sort of memories. And they go from timelines to different timelines to different sort of happenings from that planet to what I call would be more deep space and traveling. But what I was trying, I think, to say just as it break down was someone has got to start to mend things. And obviously it's not going to be them, you know. And if it's not going to be them, it's going to be us, isn't it? And love's that bluster that, you know, people need to learn how to use it. And when I say people, it includes me. Because there's many kinds of love, but there is that one love that is the foundation, the bound that bounds it all. But when I'm trying to get this, I have to go back again because there was harmony. There was love. There was lush. There was everything for everyone in that place that I saw, that I was at somehow. And there was humans traveling, they were living in these islands, they would not live on the planet, they were living on the islands, and they would travel to the planet a bit more like to look after it, to tend to it, and the islands, floating islands, were where they were living. But the snake people, they were kind of benevolent, I think. I don't have any sort of negative feeling about them when I think of them. There were others that were not the snake people. I think, were more parasitic. But I cannot give a name to them. They were, I think, reptilian, but I cannot give a name to them. Because it's all very sort of in a dream state, and it's very fleeting. But I also know that from then there was massive destruction. Massive, absolute. The whole thing was obliterated. And great death, great destruction. And, of course, because not everyone was at home, not everyone was on the islands, not everyone was on the planet, you have lots of us, lots of beings that were traveling, that were doing, that were going out, to other worlds, to other dimensions, to do other things. So there was lots and lots and lots of others that were still alive, and they had to be relocated somewhere. And this goes to the start of your conversation about the trauma. Are you still there?
Yeah, we're listening. Yeah.
Yes.
Back to this trauma, because I think, yes, to a point, all of us here are children of children of different races that somehow, you know, ended up here, and if we have through times evolved to who we are now. but we were, I believe, evolved in the sense that we were incredibly loving and beautiful people. And this is what still is trying to come to the surface here and now. And this is why I think, you know, between all this bad stuff that is happening and that the negatives always try to hold on to, someone has got to say no. There is one way out, and this way out to recover from this trauma, to heal things, is really the one way, is this love thing. I have other memories of being, you know, in spacecraft where I would think it's, you know, more sort of deep space, possibly either different dimension or very far, because that planet, all that what I described was not there. It was more sort of, there was a big planet, there was moons or moon-like structures. And there was me and other characters, not all like me, but we were all at peace. We were doing harvesting. We were doing harvesting of a variety of things. You know, I think we were scientists. I think we were, you know, picking this, that, and the other. We were studying, you know, and we were playing. It was our playground. It was things we were doing with love. And again, I see in all that, whilst we were doing all that, next thing I see, far from us, but far, you know, close enough, was loads of spaceships that appear. And our first reaction was like, wow, you know, oh, you know, what's all that? You know, more of a excited reaction, you know, like when you see visitors arrive, you don't necessarily going to think visitors are bad. So you're not going to be prepared to fight the visitors, are you? You're going to say, like, okay, visitors, you know. And the next thing that happens again is it's sort of very traumatic. So I think there's a lot of trauma. You know, there's a sort of a sense of a time warp. That time was afflicted. There's a sense of a loss, a great loss, and a loss of power. But the thing was that I believe also that we were just caught off guard, basically, and that with the power we had was that power of love that can create tenfold the power of weapons, tenfold the power of negativity. Because one person in the right love vibration can affect, I may be wrong in saying this, but there was, you know, here on Earth, you know, some scientists have tested this, but one person can affect something like 80,000, you know, all around it in the right frame of mind, yes? So these beings that we were already attuned to that. So, yes, we were all caught off guard because we were all playing in our garden, which was, you know, cosmos, which was all these beautiful planets. We were like children, unprepared for what came, because we didn't feel the need for that preparedness, because there was for a long time nothing like that. If we were to expect it, we would have sort of have dealt with it differently. And I think we would have been in that zone, in that strength of that amazing, gosh, tears are falling out. Sorry for that. Because it is, for me, it seems to be that we all here are trying to reach out for that what we lost. But that what we lost is the inside of us. And we must not give in to the fear, to the, to all what's been created around us to hold us back. Hold on 1 second. To hold us back in, and hold us behind into developing that which we already have. Please.
So what you're saying is, you're talking about a meditating Buddha can achieve a certain amount of influence, is that a single Lyran could influence maybe a whole planet's worth of people because of it's what we call the levels of initiation. So what we've been brought down these levels through trauma. And so, we need to understand the nature of the trauma because it's a complex, and it's so complex. It's like, the roof of a teepee. Each stick is supporting the rest. So it's also possible if you remove one of the sticks by finding this at least one truth and saying, look, this is really true. And you can, when everybody can see that a single truth is true. And then, so as we uncover each of the traumas and find out the truth about each of the races, who we are becomes, a more clear tapestry of, gifts rather than afflictions. Because at the moment, all of these gifts are afflictions because we don't know what they are. We don't know where they come from. You know, why am I suddenly telepathic? Why am I suddenly, seeing patterns in these carpets? Why are these eyes looking at me? You know, stuff like that pops out as these strands activate. But once we know what that strand does, how that works, this is the kind, I suppose this is the kind of work that, we'll have a word with Frank later on, in the next show. Because he's always asking what we're talking about in the show. So we'll talk about this. And see where we can take it towards healing the reptilian trauma as well. And, you know, I'd really like to look at that because there's a lot of, for instance, let's look at it. There's a lot of betrayal. And there's, a turning on your own people. So, and as somebody said, above there, it's about the lack of oxytocin. You know, you don't get the bonding thing, when you're laying an egg. So your own children are not really, you know, such great things. So in the absence of Doran V actually calling in, I'm going to read what, are you a male or I don't know. Sorry. excuse me. I do have compassion for the reptilian dilemma. They have been used by Archons and Chimera and who knows who else. Further, they do not have the empathy DNA. They are classic psychopaths and need to be treated as such. I actually had a meet-up with my local reptilian king in my backyard. He demonstrated for me by having a mock battle with an underling to show me something about them. I told him he could use my yard as long as they stayed small and out of my house and did not eat my ornamental plants in any noticeable way. They could keep the rest of the bugs in balance. He agreed and have flourished in the yard and we get along great. So yeah, we've all got our little reptilian families there. I feel compassion, empathy, not beyond the sense of reptilian brainstem and amygdala gland fight, flight, freeze response. Empathy, no, because beyond understanding that that brainstem addition, I can only empathize to the extent of understanding fear and its relationship to breathing. That's what happens when the panic button gets triggered. Breathing is interrupted. Abso-friggin-lutely, Doran. It's all about breathing and about what I call hypoxia, which is like the illusions you go into. You know, people say when they have near death, oh, they got hypoxia because the lack of oxygen to the brain. So that's what happens when you don't breathe. So if you stop breathing, you get hypoxia. And if you get hypoxia, you can be fooled into anything. I had, when I was in a coma, I don't know, 32 years ago, I was in a coma, I had this weird hallucination that, I was, in a school for conformism and that they had a administration of gas. They would give you gas to numb your mind, carbon monoxide it was, and it numbed the mind. And it caused people to be able to conform. I didn't know the words about, I didn't know what mind control was in those days. Got the conforming. And you know, I had this terrible hallucination. I saw my brother and he says, oh yes, I send all my children to the school for conformism. It should be some sort of science fiction nightmare scenario vignette or something. Maybe I could, anyway, long story. Meanwhile, back in the John Titus' question. Are all reptilians Dracos? No, Dracos are reptilians, but there are lots of other kinds of reptilians. There's this reptilian being, called the Sleetarin, which feature in the Andronicus stories, which remind me of your snake people, Lizzie. Benevolent. But, you know, snaky. There are other, you know.
What's their names? What's their name?
Sleetarin.
What's their name? Sleetarin. Because I can't see the chat.
Yeah. No, this is from the Andronicus transmission. These are beings way back in the beginning. Andronicus was a journeyman. He was like a starship traveler, like Captain Kirk kind of fella. And they were on board with all these other people, and Rodan was a super soldier that they met. But they kind of, it all developed, and they all kind of merged together. It all tied together somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah.
Well, it's quite interesting, because I suppose to an extent, a lot of these, you know, series and films, they are probably a reflection of what lies inside people's souls that write them, you know. I don't know. I mean, this is, you know, possible. But I do firmly believe that, yes, you have to have compassion. You know, it doesn't mean you accept or agree, yeah, with what the negatives are doing. Of course you don't. And you don't play with, you know, you don't allow it. But your way of not allowing it is not doing what they are prompting you to do. Go into fear zone, into the fight zone, things like that. Because we have something inside of us which is what they actually are trying not to allow for us to use, which is far more powerful than that. And that's that love thing. And that's so powerful that they don't want us to use it, because it will starve them. It will submit them to less stronger beings than what they are. And if all of us, imagine, most of us are here on this planet being able to reach that, you know, we would heal ourselves, we would heal the planet, we including, after healing everything in it, we would even heal them. Can you see that?
Well, that would be nice. There have been
beautifully said.
Yep. Thank you. Sorry to go ahead, Patrick.
No, that was just thank you, Elizabeth. That's so beautifully said.
Because, you know, it's not about fighting them, because that's what they want. Every time we fight them, they're even willing to sacrifice some of them to feed off that energy, to feed off that, and to keep us in a lower energy. No, we don't do that. You know, like, for example, a minor example which has nothing whatsoever to do with this, when I lived in my country in Portugal, I was always aware that we could have suddenly out of the blue a great big earthquake. I did not live in fear of that great big earthquake. I had various boxes with a variety of things, you know, matches, candles, torches, little cookers, little gas lights, a variety of things, you know, canned foods, this, that, the other. And they were here and there, you know. And I had in my head, if it happens, exactly what to do. So I didn't go into a fear. I saw it as a probability. You know, it's possible. And if it ever happens, I know what to do. I know what's the strongholds of the house. If I can't get out of the house, what to do? If I can, I will get out of the house because it's safer. But, you know, it, you know, he just, before I think, and that brings me again back to, you know, my dream thing, because at that point we were for such a long time without any of that bad stuff happening that we forgot. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, no problem. And the same, you know, when you live in a country, for example, that has got, you know, has had this earthquake for a long time and it's coming and it's coming and it's not coming. Oh, you know, perhaps it's never going to happen. And people fall into that lull sense of security. So they forget to practice that in their mind or to have that little kit, you know. It's not about being scared. It's about being prepared. It's not about being, having, attack on your mind, but having love, preparedness and strength, you know, being strong within yourself. Say, well, you know, if it happens, I will deal with it this. And if I can't deal with this way, I'll deal with another way, but you have it all sort of in your mind. And then, even if it doesn't go like that, part of you is prepared for it. And this love thing, I think, is the strongest, for me, is the strongest thing we can all use. Because it would heal us, it would heal our Mother Earth, it will heal all the surroundings, and ultimately it would heal the negative entities that we would like to stop hurting us without us hurting them. Because every time we react in the way they want, we give them power and we take away our power. We lose our power. And that's how I see it.
So, thank you, Elizabeth. We welcome Doran P. How are you doing?
Hey.
So, you always write such erudite and knowledgeable posts in the chat room.
Wow.
Tell us what do you know? I mean, you know, how do you know what you know? Because it's pretty deep knowledge.
I know from experience. This is not mostly things I've read. It's things I've experienced. Like, as we're talking about reptilians, I've shared on the chat that I actually was married to one for 10 years and had a child with him. And so, and this was oh gosh, I was 21 and didn't have a clue, didn't know anything about reptilians, thought spiritual meant you put in paper money in the collection basket on Sunday, not coins, and had not dated in high school. And when I got to college, this was back in the 60s, and all of the girls went to college not to learn anything but to snag a rich husband. So I did not have a clue, and I fell into a relationship in my naivete and being pushed by various and sundry people like my girlfriends and the people at this Jesuit-controlled Catholic university to be in a relationship with somebody. And I didn't, I mean, you know, it was just dumb from the beginning. I was so naive. I believed that love could cure all. I did not love this person. I was not attracted to him. I did not know what a reptilian was, had no clue about any of that. All I knew was that he stunk and he reminded me of a turtle. But I felt sorry for him, and I knew that that was a form of love, and it is. So I ended up marrying this person, despite even before our marriage. The first time we mated, he raped me violently and tortured me and did all kinds of things. I mean, this is how stupid I was. I naively believed that enough love would cure all, but this is the thing that I would like to share apropos of the previous discussion about, you know, love is the cure. Yes, love is the cure, but the expression of love terrifies reptilians, in my experience. What I discovered was the more loving I was, the more sadistic and cruel this man was. And he came by his reptilian status genetically. He was related to the Louis Kings of France, the King of Spain, the Windsors, the Italian black nobility on one side of his family, and on the other side he was related to the Rothschild. So, I mean, I literally mean reptilian genetics.
May I just say something?
Sure.
Okay. Because when I speak of love, it's not that love, okay? That love I've been in, yeah? I know exactly what you're talking about. But that love is slightly different to the love I'm talking about, which is a love that we all need to release still, yeah? Which is a higher vibration love, which has nothing to do with the love for our children, the love for our partners, the love for, you know, it's a very different love. I know exactly what you're talking about. Absolutely. I have been there.
Well, let me keep going because that's what
Please do.
Okay. So I was in this marriage, and I initially, in my naivete, I thought if I was just a good enough wife, and loving enough and patient enough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, things would settle down. But they didn't. And over years, I discovered that the kinder I was, the more loving I was, the more patient I was, the worse the abuse. And it started to dawn on me over time that my husband could not, absolutely could not understand or respond to my efforts in any way but the way he did, because he didn't have it in him genetically to understand empathy, compassion, or love. He was your classic psychopath, and he came by that not just genetically, but when he, as a young boy, was a Catholic altar boy, he actually, his parish priest turned out to be one of the worst pedophile priests in the history of the Catholic Church, who made Charlie Manson seem like a good guy. and my ex was his groomed to be his successor. And so he really and truly, you know, was beyond the beyond. And over time, I learned that out of love for him, I had to back off being expressing of love and had to learn how to set limits. And that was not an easy thing to do. And with a child who also, because he had half his genetics, was along those same lines, can you imagine, as a mother of a three-year-old, having your child kicking you and biting you and saying to you, if you don't do what I tell you to do, I will rape you and beat you up just like Daddy does. So, JP, this is from experience and hard lessons learned. That and right up to attempted murder. I mean, this guy would take our infant child and throw him up into the air so high that he would hit his head on the ceiling of our 15-foot ceilings, you know, in our old house out in the country. And I was in a position of being a mother trying to protect my child from being accidentally killed by a father who wasn't intending to harm the child, but he got a sadistic thrill out of terrorizing me. So my life lessons have been beyond the beyond, and that's where they started. That's not where they ended, and that's not where they are now. But when I finally decided that if I didn't leave that marriage, one of us was going to end up in prison, the other one was going to end up dead, and either way, our child was going to end up an orphan. And that's when I, you know, got it together, and actually with the help of the local district attorney and two alphabet agencies of the United States Corporation, I was able to get divorce papers. And when I handed this, my husband then, the divorce papers, check out what his response. His mouth literally hung open, and he was in a total state of shock. And he finally blurts out to me, why, you can't divorce me. You love me. You have to put up with my abuse. And that was 40 years ago.
Wow.
And nothing's changed. As I didn't see him again for 30 years until our child's wedding. And he actually had people coming up to me trying to bait me into admitting that I wanted to come back to him. So this is direct knowledge and experience of these kind of beings. And what I was saying in the chat room is I don't have empathy for them because I don't have their genetics. I mean, I'm of a Pleiadian genetics, not reptilian, except for my reptilian brainstem in this physical body. And for that reason, I have enough awareness to be able to have compassion, because it breaks my heart that anyone could even conceive of perceiving love as some sort of weakness to be exploited and not anything to be just honored and enjoyed.
Indeed. Well,
that was so beautiful. Thank you for sharing all that.
Well, there's a lot more to the story, but that's a good start. And that's, to me, the difference between compassion and empathy.
Yes.
But I have compassion, and I'll just quickly touch on another thing I brought up in the chat. Was I actually, now this is really bizarre, and probably most of you, I'll lose you on this one, but this is my bizarre life. One day I was out in my backyard, and underneath a patio roofed area, pergola, I had a round table, and under that round table, it was almost in the shape of like the Roman Colosseum. And I looked down, and I noticed that there was a strange-looking reptile standing under that table looking up at me. And it was up on its hind legs, and it was unlike any other reptilian, you know, not like your regular, lizard. But this one looked like kind of like a miniature Godzilla, about 4 or 5 inches big for, you know, I mean, it was bigger than all the other little lizards I've seen. And he was standing there, and all of a sudden he turned and looked at me over his shoulder and gave me some sort of telepathic communication. And then I'm looking at him, and all of a sudden another little reptilian, smaller than him, but just by maybe an inch or so, and they engaged in a gladiator-type battle for my benefit. And they were going at it. I mean, they had their hands around each other's throats. They were biting each other. And finally, the bigger, the one that I guess telepathically conceived of as the big guy, the king, he basically booted off this guy that he was doing this demonstration for me for. And then there seemed to be some kind of conversation between us, in which I communicated to him, look, I get it. You're not like me. You're not like us humans. And I don't have any anger or judgment against you. You are what you are, and you have a society. And I'm willing to share my property and my garden with you, but under these conditions. You have to stay small. You can't get bigger than you are. And you got to stay out of my house. You can't be coming in my house and taking up residence because it makes me nervous. So, and he apparently, I mean, if you could see what I saw, he actually smiled at me. I swear to God, this 4 or 5 inch tall, reptile smiled at me and then just kind of toddled off. And since then, I've had a huge uptick in the number of little reptiles in my garden, but they all stay small. They all stay out of my house. And one wandered in on accident. It had actually crawled into a box that the mailman had left at my front door. And so he got stuck in my house when I opened the box, and it jumped out. And so I opened the door. And the little reptile made a beeline for the door and took off. It's like that king reptile, you know, told all his peeps, you know, you can eat the bugs in the garden. You can eat some of the plants, but don't make it ugly. You know, don't eat where she's going to be able to see it. Now, they kept their word, and which I am guessing he made on his honor. And I was surprised because one of the other big things I learned about reptilians is they consider it just, you know, routine to lie. They have no compulsions. But they think that's just part of strategizing, lying. It's like breathing to them. But he did honor his contract with me and continues to. Now, I wish the bigger reptilians would do the same, but they're not. And I'm, like, currently very distracted with the very large reptilians who, in cahoots with the Nazis, have taken over most of the world and certainly the United States and certainly since the 1960s and are totally out of control right now. They're scared. They're doing stupid things. And they're like alligators in a feeding frenzy. But that was my little sharing. There is a huge difference between empathy and compassion. And, yes, I've had to learn that, and I did go through a stage of hating them, fearing them. But now it's just it come to some sort of understanding. But I also know that because you cannot take a reptilian's word for anything. They lie.
There's this old story, isn't there, of the boy and the snake. Do you know this story? There's this snake.
Tell it,
bro. Well, there's the snake on the side of the road, and this boy's walking up, and the boy says, you know, and the snake says, hey, I'm injured. Hey, pick me up, and then, carry me up to the top of the hill. And the boy says, oh, come on, you're kidding. You're a snake. You're going to bite me. He says, no, I won't bite you. I won't bite you. Go on. Take me up to the top of the hill. Go on. And the boy says, no, come on, ridiculous. You're a snake. You're going to bite me. And the snake says, no, of course not. No, I won't lie. Will I lie to you? Look, take me up to the top of the hill. I'm all injured. So the boy eventually is like, okay. So he picks up the snake, takes him up to the top of the hill, and guess what? Yeah, he gets bitten. And the boy said, look, you lied to me. He said, well, I'm a snake. Ta-dum. You know. This is like, you know, snakes lie.
Fact.
Exactly.
Fact. You're stupid.
There is one similar to that, but it's with a scorpion.
Yeah, same thing. So that's the thing. Incessant lying, right? Mm. And like you said, it's just strategizing.
Yep. And I'll tell you something else. Somebody in the chat had asked, how do you see into other dimensions? And I can give a quick if people want to play with this, but, and especially in regarding if you want to see what one of these guys looks like. Instead of focusing your eyes at them, look into them. In other words, you focus your eyes through them instead of at them. And if you practice that for a while, and if you really want to have an easy way of it, piss them off. Because if you can get a reptilian in a state of being pissed off, they will start to come into our visual frequency range. You get them so pissed off, they want to kill you. You'll be able to see them real clearly.
That's real handy. Then what do you do?
Well, it doesn't help if you get reactive and get scared, because then they'll take that as a submission to whatever they got planned. So very definitely that guy who goes around saying no fear, yep, that's right. Because you wouldn't want to show fear. And you don't even have to show it. If you feel it, you've already lost. So, because basically, you know, it's all about submission and dominance with them.
That is why you don't show fear, but you also don't show them anger. You don't show them or give them any of those vibrations which they need to survive on. And the only one that will diffuse and cure us all, including them, into submission is that big, strong love vibration, which our ancestors were so good at.
And that's, to me, Elizabeth, I think that has to do with frequencies.
Oh, yes.
If you have okay. Strong emotions of a lower negative frequency, that's fourth dimensional stuff. And these guys are fourth dimensional beings, basically, who, you know, have progressed up to our dimension. Now, here's where I was, this is something that I was taught by a teacher of JP, you mentioned sound, the power of sound. Well, there's a yoga called Surat Shabd Yoga, the yoga of the sound current, the audible life stream of God. And that's all about frequency. And that person that initiated me into all of those dimensions or levels of that practice said that the reptilians were actually fourth dimensional beings, but for the most part, their frequency was actually lower than the frequency of the third dimension. I never really, I mean, that's just what he said. I can only share what he said because I'm not totally clear what that means, except that, you know, like if we're fifth dimensional beings, if you've ever read about the Greek gods and, you know, all of that ancient history stuff from Greece, I think all those beings were fifth dimensional beings. And even when I was a kid and I was reading all that stuff, it dawned on me, geez, these people are so emotional. And that's it, you know, because they were always getting into trouble with their emotions. So, yeah, Elizabeth, I think you're right. If your frequency is in the higher frequencies of love, then yes, that is to me the most, because if you think about love as being the most basic spark of creation, like the audible life stream, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and without Him has been made nothing that has been made, or something like that. And I think that's what it is. If you can just hold in your heart, and not in your heart muscle, in your heart brain, which is behind the heart muscle, then you're not as vulnerable. Because I've had, you know, like I said, that's the only reason I'm still alive, or I'd have been dead a long time ago. But it doesn't mean that I don't get scared of them when they're big, 6 foot, 10 foot, 12 foot tall, and they're coming after. I have experienced that and am experiencing that currently.
Yeah, well, yes, yes. But, you know, if you are at the point you already are, you hold that. And every time you hold that, because you know you are holding that love frequency, which is a very strong frequency, it throws waves literally at these people and at other people. It affects everyone around us, yeah? It just is amazing. And every time you hold that frequency and you learn to hold and keep it steady, you grow just that tiny little bit further in frequency, which is something that we are all learning now, only sort of because we are starting to speak so freely about it. And, you know, it's resonating more and more with us. So we're talking about it and we're learning about it. And every day is a little step, you know, in learning these frequencies. It's a very strong, very, very strong frequency. And sometimes... And go on.
I'm sorry.
Go on.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I didn't, before I forget this, somebody was asking about, you know, the... Oh, was you, JP, talking about the reptilian trauma?
Yes, well, because this is what it, but this is the idea, is that we all carry a trauma from, not only do we carry the genes, but we also carry their kind of birth trauma. Everything has a birth trauma, it seems. And we're acting it out. And like you say, these Greek characters, these Greek gods, yeah, we're seeing into their minds, and they're just like, you know, innocents. And they, you know, can't believe that somebody betrayed them. You know, all this stuff. And yeah, very emotional. Very, very emotional. And that's how, well, that's how they were. That's how our ancestors were. Why Pleiadians became Pleiadians, because they decided to, wipe all the reptilians out.
Well, yeah. And I want to get to the basic. Why do you suppose that when they were playing genetic engineers with us, why they installed the reptilian brainstem into our mammalian bodies? I think there's a reason for that. I think they were genetically trying to figure a way out of their lower fourth dimensional prison. I think that the whole concept of the reptilian brainstem with the amygdala gland, which sits right at the top of that brainstem, which is the human panic button, and when that gets triggered, the human responds in particular ways on different levels. On a physical level, when a person gets scared, shocked, you know, threatened, the human body releases cortisol, a hormone, which gets into the bloodstream, goes straight up into the brain through that brainstem. When it hits the amygdala gland, it causes a reaction that's called the fight or flight response. Well, actually, it's the fight, flight, or freeze response. As Cliff High recently pointed out on a very interesting video. But when that panic button gets set off, the other thing that happens that really sets in a cyclic reaction of more and more and more panic is when that gets set off, humans stop breathing correctly. We either stop breathing and hold our breath, and if you've ever seen a kid who gets really scared, they'll demonstrate it for you. They'll either sit there, you know, holding their breath, or they will start breathing real shallowly and real rapidly. And either way, you're not getting enough oxygen to your brain, and it will cause you to pass out. If you run, what also happens between that and the cortisol, the blood goes to your core and away from your extremities, and that goes back to, you know, if somebody cuts you, you're less likely to bleed to death if you don't, you know, if all your blood is not in your extremities. Plus, the running away part, you know, will push blood back into the extremities as you run and, you know, helps you get up speed. Actually, I was told by the very person that initiated me into the Surat Shab Yoga Mysteries is that's what my lifetime is all about, that I have had in the past a tendency to refuse to fight and that I would just go away. And in fact, in my last incarnation, I committed suicide in a Nazi concentration camp because I would not fight back. And so, you know, it's been a lifetime of learning all about the fear factor and also the compassion factor and the love factor. How love does not necessarily mean you cave in or you give in or you run away. It's also standing in the power of your love, but also not using it as a weapon for people who can't handle it.
That just about sums it up. Thank you so much, very much.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Thank you, JP.
For sharing all that. Elizabeth, thank you very much for your sharing. Patrick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bless your heart. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Beyond.